We've got a community board meeting next Wednesday. It's in a different place, isn't it?
Yes, the meeting next Wednesday, same time, but it'll be at the Tiuka Hall.
Okay.
Just opposite the Tiuka store. The whole idea of that is because the community board area has expanded out to include Tiuka and Te Mata, is that we'll look to have one meeting at Tiuka and one meeting at Te Mata each year, as well as the ones here.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll get a few of the locals along, and they can see what happens and also hopefully get some feedback from them.
Okay, so at that time is 1:30, the start time?
Yep, start time hasn't changed.
Okay, and when will the one at Tomato be? Is that in the plans?
It's not in the plans at the moment, but we'll certainly have it. Probably leave that one to spring.
Yep.
And that sort of thing, and have one, you know, one here and one at Tiuka in autumn, one in Tomato in spring.
Okay, all right. So we've still got more than half a year to go, so plenty of time. Now, there was something when I emailed you about doing the interview, someone had just put a photo on the notice board of flooding in the car park at the rugby grounds, rugby netball grounds. What has been the cause of that?
Well, I don't know. Well, I guess the cause of it is that the gauge settings are actually not... Well, the gauge settings are fixed. Well, they can be adjusted, but they are manually adjusted. So I guess as we get a high tide, yep, as against a low high tide, you know, a 2.6 metre tide is against a 3.2 metre tide.
Well, today's one is actually going to be 2.1 metres. That's how poor the high tides can be. So.
Yeah, so you can get a pretty big swing in that. So when the gate's set at a certain position, then depending on the height of the tide, then more or less water will flow into that area, as I understand it.
Okay.
Now, I haven't studied how it exactly works, but... I'm told that I had to talk to Watercare this week just to try and understand what actually happens, and they told me they thought it was WRC's, Waikato Regional Council's, responsibility. But I haven't pinned that down yet. But I also have seen Waikato District Council guys adjusting the gate at times as well. So I need to understand who actually adjusts it. But
maybe we should give you the password, the key, or whatever it takes to get in there.
No, I don't want it.
You don't want that? Somebody local would be good, because if you see it's flooded, then you know.
Well, I guess it needs to be adjusted a couple of times during the month to cater for the level of the tides that we're going to have.
Yeah, well, there's over a metre difference in terms of the highest, the king tide, to the not very high tides.
Yeah,
so not very high tides. You're talking about gates. Are they under sort of under the road, Wallace Street there?
Yeah, they're under the gate. I don't know what type of gate it is. Yeah. I haven't actually climbed down there to have a look. But yeah, the gate's at Wallace Street, just on the town side of the old factory, dairy factory.
Okay, so yep. Is that something that actually happens very much? I don't remember a lot of flooding there, although other people might have seen it.
Yeah, I can't say. I've noticed it a little bit because it's been raised at the community board or in discussions with the community board and that sort of thing. So I've sort of become a little bit more conscious in the last 3 years of it. And it's certainly flooded at different times. But I've got to admit, just in the last few months, last probably 12 months, it seems to be flooding a lot more often. So whether the gate's been set down a bit lower and letting more water in, or whether that's actually a strategy. But I was talking to one of the other community board members who's sort of a bit more involved in the stormwater side about it, because it looks like a lot of it's dying to me, but whether that's a seasonal thing and it dies back and back again.
The planting and the rushes and all that reserve.
Sort of thing.
Well, if they're getting extra high water in there, that will change, that they're not used to, I'm sure that will change the sort of the ecosystem a bit.
Yeah, well, it'll also change the salinity of the area as well, because it'll be getting a lot more salt water in it. So, yeah, it's something that we'll have a look at and try and come to grips with. We'll just find out for a start who actually manages it, whether it's regional council or district council. And then how do we actually manage it a bit more efficiently, so that we don't actually have the flooding up over the walkway at the far end by the rugby club?
Would it be easier if we didn't have two different councils over the same area? I know they have different jobs, but this is a generalised big picture question. Just interested in your thoughts.
They do two totally different functions.
Yeah.
And if we combine them, well, you know, you'd have to answer the question yourself: is one if efficient enough at the present time to be able to put them two together and be more successful yet? I don't know. I'm probably more in favour of amalgamating some of your councils, like your Waikato and Hamilton, into one, and driving it that way rather than trying to drag regional council in, which has really got an environmental and buses. Responsibility and things like that rather than looking at services for towns and things like that.
Yeah, I think, there's certainly improvements to be made in terms of combining efforts, but I also think having local people on the ground is also important, because if the person who was in charge of those gates was local and was just driving around and saw that it was flooded, like, there's no need for emails to be sent and questions to be asked and all this kind of thing. They just go and sort it.
Yeah, well, that's right, and that's why we need to find out actually who's responsible for adjusting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, while we're on the subject of flooding, do we have any updates on what's happening with the walkway down at Lorenzen Bay, the one from Cambrai Road, the one that flooded, and there was talk about, is that going to be relocated or is it not going to be relocated? And it seems to be in limbo. The last time I was looking, it seemed to be in limbo.
Yeah, it's still in limbo, to be honest, Aaron. Okay. And we need to push it a bit harder. We've got some answers back from council that for Lisa and I aren't satisfactory. So we've actually asked Glenn for another meeting.
So Glenn is one of the staff members in charge of this.
Yeah, he's taken over. He's a sort of team leader for Parks and Reserves.
Okay. Another new staff member to get to know.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. The turnover is fairly significant, so it does make it a hell of a lot challenging. People understand where you're coming from, or trying to get to understand what their thoughts are and how what ideas they've got for the different problems or reserves and parks and walkways around town, and getting them to sort of come on board with what the community's ideas are as well.
Yeah. Well, the people who live down there are very clear about what they would like to see happen. So
yeah, well, and that's right. You know, and if you sort of take that one and sort of say, you know, Lisa and I actually walked it, and I can see the benefits of moving the walkway up along the foreshore there. And that sort of thing, it gives you a nice outlook over the harbour, if that's where the walkway went.
Yeah.
And I can also see the challenge for the people that live there, that all of a sudden they've got a whole lot of public walking through past their front door.
Yeah, and for the people who live in certain parts of Cambrai Road, they would have to walk up a hill and then down a hill to get there as well.
So, yeah.
Okay, all right, so that's all right. We'll leave that one in limbo. Project down at the wharf, can we get onto the pontoon yet, or is there still work to be done?
No, you can't get onto the pontoon just yet.
Okay, folks, listen to that. Don't try yet, people.
They're still finishing off the walkway to the pontoon.
Oh, yeah.
And then at some point, hopefully very soon, next couple of weeks, they'll be putting lighting onto the pontoon as well.
Okay.
So I would say we're about a month away from the pontoon being used.
Okay.
Going well. I haven't had a final update from Richard, but that walkway needs to be concreted. There's extra rock there that needs to be removed. And then the lighting needs to go in.
And just as someone like you, you go fishing, don't you? So
yeah.
So the what's the benefit? Because I don't. Or what's the benefit of having the pontoon? I don't know if I've ever asked that question.
Well, I guess the benefit of the pontoon is that it'll make it a lot easier for boats that are coming in there. They can drop someone off on that pontoon or on the other pontoon that was put in by the Sports Fishing Club. They can stay moored there while. Against the pontoon while they go and get their boat trailers, which these days are parked anywhere, all the way up Wallace Street, right up to James Street almost.
Yes.
So it gives them time. They can just sit there rather than having to putt around in the harbour waiting for someone to come back.
Are there certain times of the day, or like on a busy weekend, when there actually be quite a few boats trying to get home at the same time?
I don't think it gets that crowded yet down there. There's certainly, you'll often have two or three boats launching at the same time or being retrieved at the same time, but it doesn't get too hectic down there.
Okay.
But it's quite possible that you could have four boats moored to the pontoon while the guys are going getting the trailers at various stages.
Yeah. And while we're talking about the boat ramp, I think last time we talked, it was still maybe time to submit about boat ramp fees in general, and that was part of a particular bylaw. That's all. What process is that bylaw at? What stage of the process is that at?
The bylaw, the submissions are closed.
Yeah.
And the hearing's been held. I haven't heard that the council's made a final decision on the recommendations or
bylaw. You don't get to go to those meetings, do you?
Yeah, I went to the one on the hearing. I went to the hearings because I presented.
Yeah.
And was able to listen to anyone else, others presenting as well.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And yeah, it would have gone to the last council meeting. So I just need to check with Lisa to see whether that, or you can ask Lisa when you interview her, whether that's gone through the last council meeting or whether it'll be, the recommendations will be in the next council meeting.
Yeah, well, I might talk to him next week after the community board meeting. Was there anyone there opposing boat ramp fees?
No, I haven't had actually anyone. People have asked me why, yeah, but I haven't actually had anyone actually oppose them.
Well, what do you say when you say when they ask that question?
Well, basically, the reason we're suggesting them is that basically it'll assist to cover the maintenance of the ramps,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. And so basically, I think most people are happy to pay a fee as long as it goes back to maintaining the asset.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fee, as we've sort of indicated, is just discounted for Sports Fishing Club guys or Waikato District Council ratepayers as against those from out of town.
Okay. Back to the wharf projects. We're in a design phase for the Western Walkway at the moment, am I correct, as in a detailed design phase?
Yeah, we're in the detailed design phase and okay, the consenting phase for that.
Yeah, so we're still waiting for that.
Yeah, we should I'll have to follow up and let you know, but we can't be that far away from being able to come into the public and say this is what's being done.
Yeah, okay. And I know that there needed to be like more investigation about the quality of the ground under where the work's been done and things like that, didn't there?
Well, that was looking at the bit from the front of Tony Sly's shop to right through to the Dolphin, where the soil was found to be very, very soft, the ground was found to be very soft. At this stage, the intention will be only to take the walkway as far as Tony Slice Pottery and stop there. Then there'll be some sort of barrier put up there, and also that surface from there onto the wharf will be all resealed as well.
Yeah, but it's not a public road once you get onto the wharf anyway.
No, it removes the biggest hazard as far as pedestrian and traffic interface is concerned.
Okay, and there was a rail being put up. Has that been put up? No.
A rail?
A railing around the wharf somewhere?
Oh, that's part of the stage that's going on now.
Okay,
so, that must be imminent as well. The design and the colour and everything's been sorted.
Okay.
And it's being manufactured at the present time, so it can't be far away from going up.
If they've decided the colour, then that's usually the last thing. So it's definitely on the way. We're talking about railings, there was talk about the Wee Nera walkway from the end of Bow Street jetty along to the bridge and past the bridge as well. That looked like it was probably going to be off the table. They were going to see how much it would cost to put a railing through there. Has that happened yet, or we're still
waiting for that feedback back on that. Some maintenance work will definitely be done on the walkway, where the rock revetment is basically breaking out and things like that. That'll all be repaired, and we've also asked for all the lighting to be upgraded. So those would hopefully they'll be the two minimum things. Whether a walkway rail or rail goes in at this stage, I guess. A, do we? The question's got to be answered. Do we need a rail and that? And then B, are we better off? You know, do we put a temporary rail in at this stage, or do we wait till the walkway is done up properly?
And
widened.
Yeah, and the question is, where would the rail go and how narrow might it make the path?
Yeah, really? Well, that's the problem you've got at the moment, because everything on that edge is pretty soft. So it's how would you successfully fix a rail there at the present time anyway?
You could break everything drilling holes into it, couldn't you? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty old. When was that put on? It must be like 100 years ago, roughly.
I could give you some dates, but not off the top of my head.
Not off the top of your head. You've got your history hat on.
It was done just after that first wharf was built down there.
Right. What else have we got? The land-based sewage treatment research is still ongoing. I understand the council was doing some research into, is the proposed site a good site for technical reasons? And that's probably still going, is it?
Yeah, that's still ongoing. I haven't heard any more back off from that since Matthew was at the last community board meeting, one before last.
Okay, that Matthew who was Watercare?
Watercare, yeah.
Okay, I nearly said Harbour Care, but that's a different organisation.
Yeah, no, we're actually meeting Matthew today, the community board, to have a tour around the wastewater system plant, so that we've got a better understanding of what's up there and how it works and things like that, along with a couple other councillors as well from Waikato District Council.
Okay, all right. That'll be a little tourist event, not really a tourist event for you guys. The thing I was wondering about that is that there were some community members living up that way, and it could be one of those NIMBY things, like, you know, I don't want that near me. But if the landowner is happy and you can get a resource consent through the regional council, whose job it is to take care of the environment, is anyone actually able to stop that from happening? Do you know?
No, I don't know what the legal implications are.
Yeah.
From a legislative point of view,
this just kind of occurs to me now. So I'm not really.
No, don't know.
So what else have you been working on, Dennis, over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks since I saw you?
We've done a little bit of work on civil defence plan and mapping that.
Oh yeah.
And I've got to talk to Ross and release her again, and Scott, and then hopefully within the next 6 weeks, we can have a meeting with those public groups that are interested and try and move that a stage further forward.
Okay.
So we've just got to keep driving that one slowly, but still the intent to get that moved.
So Scott's the staff member. He's got all the paperwork that has to be sorted, does he?
Yeah, he's an emergency team leader, or a civil defence emergency team leader, I think they call him.
Okay. Do they have civil defence plans for the other communities in the district? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know.
No, I don't know why I'm asking you, the Raglan Community Board chairperson. I was just like, is everyone going through? It's just been a long, long road to actually get a formalised plan with people who've got jobs and tasks.
Yep.
And I guess I know that radio, as a radio station, we'll be one of those organisations that you'll be in touch with. And we've got to think about, are we really prepared? We had a practice a few months ago. We can install a backup transmitter site in about 25 minutes.
No, okay.
It was pretty good, yeah. But you don't know where it's going to be until the emergency happens.
No, well, that's right. And it depends on the type of emergency. It's the same with trying to sort of identify locations for an emergency hub within Raglan, should we have a significant emergency, and things like that. It depends, again, on the type of emergency, who's got diesel generators handy and who's got the facility, a large enough facility to be able to cater with an influx of people managing it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's continuing. What else have we got on your
list? I guess the other thing that has happened in council this last sort of 6 or 8 weeks is that they've started to do some preliminary work for the long-term plan. So they've had a couple of workshops on community expectations and trying to identify, community expectations, and including the simple things like responding to service requests in a timely manner, right through to sort of housing and all those types of things. So I guess the biggest thing that for the community board and for the community probably going forward is that we have got, we are in the process of developing a new long-term plan for the community. It'll be a process. The timeline sort of shows it being approved in June 24. So, we've got a 12-month period to work through it. So during that period, there'll be consultation with the community on what their expectations. We have got regular natural lease documentation, that was done by the community, but we need to sort of work through that and what are the priorities and what do they want to see in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Where does the priority for the One May Bridge, which has been topical in the last few community board meetings, sit in relation to, a hub for a recreational hub for youth and various other things, and along with roading and footpaths and those types of things. So, it'll be a really interesting discussion.
The bridge one is interesting because it's always in the long-term plan, but so far away, and it just keeps getting pushed back. But if I'm part of the discussion around the land-based sewage treatment, is that there's going to be a site, the treated wastewater has to get pumped to the site. That normally goes on a road, so then council staff might be looking at where a road goes. If we do build a road around that might come from the Mangatawhiri Road intersection around the back of Raglan, that would actually take the pressure off the existing bridge.
That's right, yeah.
So there's a lot, and we come back to, as we always do, our need for a structure plan.
Yeah. Well, we've got to map those sorts of things and just see where, and do some traffic analysis just to see what the flows will be.
Yeah, are they doing that? Is that part of the research they're doing?
I believe that's happening at the present time, but I haven't seen any outcome of it.
Yeah. We heard that at 2 board meetings ago. That'll be interesting to get that information when it comes out. What else have you been...
Those are the main things that we've been working on recently.
Trail strategy?
At this meeting coming up on Wednesday, Well are doing a presentation on a proposal they've got for some more EV chargers in town.
Okay.
They want to install some more EV chargers, so they're coming along to do a presentation. And we've also got council coming along to do a presentation on the trail strategy that's being mapped out at the moment for the whole of Waikato District Council, but has, you know, significant trails within the Ragland area as well.
Okay.
So that should be quite interesting.
That's trails for walking, biking, horsing?
I don't know the full extent of it.
All right, we'll find out on Wednesday.
We'll find out on Wednesday if you come to the meeting.
Okay. You mentioned Well wants to put some extra EV chargers. There was someone presented from a company that was working with council about putting EV chargers in town. Have they just disappeared, or what's happened with that?
Yeah, they seem to – well, I think talking to Rachel from council, there's been several companies that have done presentations to them, and some of them don't seem to have pushed on with it. And I think also it's whether they're putting in DC fast chargers or what they're actually looking to install as well. Whereas, so now Well have come along, and they're looking at some DC chargers to go in. The quick discussion I had with them on the side of the road a couple of weeks ago was that they're looking at two initially, but maybe six in the long term, which would be quite good. The advantage of Well is, well, they will be charging for them, so you will have to pay to charge your car. And I believe the two outside the Plunkett Room here now are charged.
Oh, charge
ones have been changed over to, yeah, I believe so.
Right, you get charged money while they charge the car.
Yeah, so, the advantage of the Well, it's a trust, so the money all goes back into the community and to grants and various other things, or to rebates to those who pay for their power.
Okay, well, we get grants from Well Trust, so...
That's right.
Yeah.
So do we as the Surf Life Saving Club.
Yeah,
so,
we're very happy with that. And how is the Surf Life Saving Club?
Surf Life Saving Club's very good. A plug for them is for everyone that's been involved over the last 50 years. They do have their 50th reunion coming up in Labour Weekend.
Oh, okay.
So there'll be a whole lot of festivity in Labour Weekend. So if anyone's interested in attending that's been involved, there'll be a notice in the Chronicle, probably the next Chronicle, so there'll be some contacts in there that people can get in touch with. Liz is also writing the history of the club.
This is your wife?
Yeah.
Who I interviewed recently about cemeteries.
Cemetery. If anyone's got any historical photos or historical information regarding the club, she'd be keen to talk to you and get some information as well.
So what did the surf club used to be in a different place, that's right. It was down the end of... Rerekere of a Memorial Drive.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And then Michael Hope, in his wisdom, when they created Wainui Reserve, they identified an area there for the Surf Life Saving Club, and Michael and Bill sort of got that passed as part of the development of the reserve. And
it's pretty much 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good 20 years ago now. It was about 1999 that we actually started building a club.
Okay. So that's, 50, imagine what was here 50 years ago. Not much happening. Was there even?
It was a thriving little metropolis.
Well, you were here. I wasn't. I was not very aware of much 50 years ago. I was only one.
Okay.
And I certainly wasn't here. Where was I? It doesn't matter. Discretionary fund. We just mentioned the discretionary fund for community groups.
Yep, that's still available. Ross Wallace is sort of our discretionary fund guru.
Oh, yes.
So effectively, council's changing the way they're doing it. So any applications that come in will go initially from council to Ross, and then Ross will evaluate them, talk to the group that's applied for the funding to make sure he's clear and the documentation is clear, and then Ross will make a recommendation to the community board on it, which hopefully will streamline the process when we're having the meetings. Well, there'll still be an expectation for the community groups to come and present on their application and that type of thing. So,
and for people listening, like, I've done that and I've been there when people haven't turned up to present. It's definitely better to be there.
Yeah. So we've got two applications for discretionary fund grants this coming meeting.
Yeah. Okay. And so can people go straight to Ross? Or should they go to someone in council?
They can talk to Ross directly. He'll direct them to the paperwork initially to get them to fill that in.
Yeah.
But if you're wondering whether or not your organisation or what you're applying for might get a grant, there's no harm in having talked to Ross and myself and just getting a feel for that initially rather than spending a whole lot of time doing an application only to find that it's not really that relevant to what we want to fund.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as We're looking to it's more seed money to help someone get something up and running, and that sort of thing. So we're not looking to fund something in totality.
There's not enough money for that.
No, there isn't. We only have, what, $20,000 a year, so it doesn't go far amongst all the small community groups.
I think it's less. I think it's 14.
Oh, 14, is it?
That was the last time I looked.
Okay, I'll check that. I'll better check that.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like, I think something happened over COVID. I think people were making less applications during the COVID years.
So we've ended up with a bit of surplus.
Yeah, a bit of a surplus. Which is a hint for people, actually, that there is a bit of a surplus at the moment. So
yeah, so being quick.
You're being quick, yeah. All right, folks, we've been talking to Dennis Amor, our community board chairperson. Have we covered everything that's up at the moment?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Remind people when the next meeting is.
Yeah, so the next meeting, 3rd of May, 1:30 p.m. at Te Uku Hall. So hopefully, if those that are living in the area want to come along, they're more than welcome to come along. And if they've got anything they want to raise, there is still a public forum for the first half an hour of the meeting.
Yeah.
So we're more than happy to hear from them.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming in, Dennis.